Hey everybody, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Got a full slate for you guys today. Got a couple interesting subjects we're going to talk about. First up on our supplement and nutrition tip, we're going to talk about essential fatty acids. Fish oil, something that I've talked about a lot on my blog and you know, probably mentioned in podcasts here and there, is, you know, an essential fatty acid. And going to go over, you know, what these essential fatty acids are, why it's so important that you take them, and then, you know, some general advice, you know, how much should you be taking, you know, what do you need to keep in mind when looking for, you know, an essential fatty acid supplement and things like that. You know, just kind of on a little side note here, it's funny, I took a little heat in my last podcast for my calories don't count thing in the nutrition section. And, you know, the fact that I have to explain to people what essential fatty acids are and why you need to be taking them is a direct result of that reductionist mindset of nutrition that I talked about in the last podcast. Because, you know, we all remember the low fat craze, and you know, it's still popping around here. And, you know, again, that goes back to the fact that, you know, science, for better or for worse, likes to reduce things down to their individual components and look at them. And so when you do that and you look at fat, and then you say, oh, people that eat a high fat diet, you know, have you know, higher potential for this, that, and the other, so therefore fat must be bad. You know, again, it's not fat that's bad. It's just like with the calories, you know, it's way more important when you're eating them and where they're coming from, rather than, you know, fats themselves. And so, you know, the fact that as a society we are so confused on you know, essential fatty acids and things like that, pretty much backs up my point about the calories don't count and how the reductionist mindset of looking at nutrition just doesn't work. And so anyway, so that's why we're going to talk about essential fatty acids. The other thing that we're going to talk about in our gear review is 26 inch wheels versus 29 inch wheels, and just kind of give you guys my opinion on the subject and kind of go over the three main touted advantages of the 29 inch wheels and just kind of give you my perspective on those advantages and you know, whether they really are advantages, whether there's other ways to gain them and kind of things like that. And then last but not least, in the training tip, I'm going to talk about how you can't do more of the same to get to the next level, and basically talk about why, you know, at a certain point, just riding your bike isn't going to get you better at riding your bike, and how you can avoid frustration and plateaus when you understand that, you know, what got you to the level that you're at isn't what's going to get you to the next level, and how you got to look at, you know, your training from that perspective, and how you can't just keep doing more of the same in order to advance your riding. And so, so that's it. So we got a lot on deck here. So let's get to it. Hey guys, back with this podcast supplement tip. And in this tip, I wanted to talk about essential fatty acids. And essential fatty acids are things like fish oil or flaxseed oil. Basically, they are fatty acids that your body can't produce on its own. And so you have to eat them and get them from an outside source. So that's why they're called essential fatty acids. And literally, if you don't get enough essential fatty acids in your diet, a lot of things grind to a halt. Basically, the way that our body works is it's called a rate limiting factor. And, you know, it uses a bunch of different, you know, materials and substances in order to, you know, do different things in the body, produce hair, skin, repair muscle tissue, keep joints healthy, produce hormones, you know, all these different things that go into keeping your body up and running and healthy. And what happens is it's just like a production line. You know, if you have everything else, if you have a storehouse full of widgets, but you don't have, you know, enough of the right screws for those widgets, then it doesn't matter how many widgets you have. And it's the same thing with the essential fatty acids. You know, if your body does not have enough of these essential fatty acids, then some of these essential things going on in your body are going to grind to a halt, because you may have plenty of the other materials for your body to continue to repair and take care of these things. But if you don't have the essential fatty acids that it needs, it can't use those other materials. And so that's why getting enough essential fatty acids in your diet is so important, because you can sabotage the rest of your dietary efforts if you don't do that. And so, like I've already mentioned, essential fatty acids are, it's amazing what these things are used for in your body. You can go to like PubMed or a medical journal site and enter fatty acids or fish oil, which is one of the more popular essential fatty acids, and just about any disease or anything like that, and you're going to find, studies correlating, taking essential fatty acids with, a reduction in joint pain, reduced risk of cancer. It's needed for healthy hair and skin. It's needed to produce hormones, like I mentioned, like testosterone. So if you're training hard and you're not getting enough of these essential fatty acids, then your body's not going to be able to hormonally support your training efforts. And so it's kind of funny because, essential fatty acids have a ton of science behind them and just a laundry list of positive effects and performance enhancing effects and disease prevention effects and things like that. And yet it's just not a sexy supplement. It's hard to package fish oil or these essential fatty acids in slick packaging and give it a bunch of marketing hype. So, you end up with riders out there taking stuff like NO2 and sports legs and things that are pretty dubious and have very little real science backing them up, and yet they're not taking essential fatty acids. And that's directly related to the marketing hype behind, certain supplements and how it's hard to hype essential fatty acids. Quick little side thing, same thing with weight training. A barbell and weight plates is the most effective piece of training equipment ever invented, but you can't repackage that every year. So that's why you always have to come out with new cardio equipment and new machines and stuff like that, because you always got to have something for the public to buy. Same thing with forks, new valvings, got a reason to sell your fork and get a new one the next year. But anyways, so getting a little off subject there, but the essential fatty acids, like I said, are extremely important for a huge laundry list of things. And so a couple things you want to keep in mind when taking essential fatty acids, and the first is that you want to get like 5 to 10 grams of this stuff a day. And when you look back at the history of humans, we basically came up on a diet that was very rich in essential fatty acids. Our brains use essential fatty acids, quite a bit. And so, our bodies are designed to use them. You're probably aware that we're really kind of strangers in a strange land in modern society. We're not designed to be sedentary. We're not designed to have access to cheap, nutrient poor calories and stuff like that. And we're also not designed to not have enough essential fatty acids in our diet. And so you want to get like 5 to 10 grams of this stuff a day, which means that one little pill that you're taking that the dude at GNC told you to take is not cutting it. And I fell into this trap too, and this is just, it's real typical for the supplement industry, where they catch on to something being important, and so they put it out, but they don't really understand dosages and stuff like that. So that's how you end up with people taking, like 1 to 3 grams of fish oil a day, which is, better than nothing, but it's not, what you need. I would say a minimum of 5 grams a day. And, I defer all this stuff to guys who are much smarter than I am in nutrition. I know quite a bit about nutrition and supplements, but it's definitely not my realm of expertise. And so, I refer to guys like John Berardi at precisionnutrition.com for information like this. So, these are some recommendations that he gives. But so the easiest way to take that, obviously you don't want to be taking like 5 to 10 pills a day. And so what you want to do is get an oil. I mix the oil in my protein shake. And so the fish oil is probably the easiest and most common way to get your essential fatty acids. And so you can get like a lemon flavored fish oil at pretty much any health food store and mix it in your protein shake. And it really does taste, like lemon. Back in the day when we didn't have flavored fish oil, it pretty much was pot pills. That was about the only way you could get that stuff down. So the other thing you want to keep in mind is that there are different kinds of essential fatty acids out there. Fish oil, I mean, I've mentioned this a lot. I talk about this a lot on my blog because it is the most popular. It's probably the easiest way to get your essential fatty acids, but it's not the only one. Flaxseed oil and hemp oil are also pretty popular options as well. You can also get a blend, which blends different oils, which is actually probably the best if we want to like really get down to, you know, technically what's the best option for you. And so something like Udo's Choice is a really good option for a blend. And so, you know, those are some things to keep in mind when looking at taking fish oil, you know, 5 to 10 grams a day. And like I said, thinking about the different options that you have there. But that's pretty much it. Like I said, it's not a super sexy supplement. You know, it's not going to add, you know, 50 pounds to your bench press overnight. It's not going to pack on a bunch of mass overnight. But what it is going to do is give your body the material that it needs to support your training. And so over the course of weeks and months and years, that hard training with the right support is going to lead to better results. And so that's, you know, that's where these things come into play. So this is an everyday supplement. You know, I've talked about creatine before, which I don't think is an everyday supplement, but this is definitely one that you want to be taking on a daily basis. And so so that's it. That's your, you know, little info on essential fatty acids and why it's so important and some things to keep in mind with it. But definitely my number one supplement recommendation. I mean, that's the number one thing I ask people when they come to me and start asking me about different supplements is, are you taking fish oil? And if the answer is no, then I don't even want to talk about anything else until you're taking 5 to 10 grams of that a day. And then we can start talking about some other supplements. And so just make sure that you've got this very important component of your supplement and nutrition regimen in place. So hope you guys have enjoyed this supplement tip, and I will talk to you guys in the next podcast supplement tip. Hey guys, back with this podcast gear review. And in this gear review, I wanted to talk about 26-inch wheels versus 29-inch wheels and kind of what some of the advantages and disadvantages of each are and maybe some unique perspective on the two and you know, bring up some things that I've never really heard brought up before when considering which would be better for you. And so, you know, for those of you that don't know, and if you don't, where have you been? 26-inch wheels, that's your average mountain bike size. You know, they're 26 inches in diameter. A 29-inch wheel is 29 inches in diameter. It's also the exact same size as a roadie wheel, wheel that you'd find on a road bike. And so the theory behind the bigger wheels is there's three main things that they say that it's going to do for you. One, it's going to roll over objects easier. And number two, that it's going to maintain its momentum better because the wheels are bigger. And three, that you get more feet per pedal stroke. Basically, a bigger wheel is going to cover more ground every rotation than a 26-inch wheel will. So when you're pedaling and you give one pedal stroke, which gets the, or two, whatever it is, you get, you know, you pedal and you get a 26-inch wheel to turn over one time, and then you do the same thing on a 29-inch wheel, the 29-inch wheel will get further than the 26-inch wheel. So those are the three main advantages that come with the 29-inch wheel. But, you know, in my opinion, there's a couple things that it's not the whole story, basically. You know, when I look at this, I'm, you know, as you guys have probably figured out, I've got a little bit of a unique perspective on mountain biking. I'm very wary. I just, you know, naturally don't trust authority figures. So, you know, I question everything and take very few things at face value. So when this 29-inch thing started coming along, you know, I'm watching it get more and more popular, and I'm reading the advantages and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm out on the trail riding with people on 29-inch wheels. And, you know, again, it's kind of like with the clipless pedals. I kept waiting for someone to blow my doors off and for it to be directly attributed to this bigger wheel size. And it never happened. And so as I started thinking more about it, I started to realize that there's definitely a lot more to the story than just what's on the surface. And so I kind of wanted to dig a little bit deeper into those three things and give, you know, kind of my insight onto, you know, into them. And so the first thing I'll talk about is the how the wheels cover more distance when you pedal. And that was the last advantage that I had mentioned, how when you pedal and you get your 26-inch wheel to turn over once, and you pedal and you get your 29-inch wheel to turn over once, the 29-inch wheel is going to cover more distance, which is true. But in my opinion, most mountain bikers need to be working on learning how to pedal less and go faster. And, you know, your average mountain biker's technical skills are not very good. And instead of working on technical skills, I would say that your money realistically would be way better invested in a skills camp than it would be in a new 29-inch bike. And again, if your skills have increased, then you don't have to pedal as much. And so if you're not pedaling as much, then that advantage is pretty much gone. And so, you know, again, with the technical skills, this is kind of one of those things, again, like, you know, it's not road riding on dirt. And this is kind of one of those roadie influences on our sport where it becomes all about pedaling, when there's so much more to being a good trail rider. There's so much more to being fast on the trail than just your ability to pedal. And so, you know, if you increase your technical skills, you're going to be able to carry more speed through a corner. If you get stronger, you're going to be able to slam into rough sections faster and be able to carry more speed out of those rough sections. You know, if you learn how to pump terrain, then you can get some free speed off of the backside of every little dip and undulation in the trail. And so, you know, again, one of the things that I've noticed and has been pointed out to me when I ride with other groups that haven't ridden with me before is how much less I pedal than everyone else. I'm constantly standing and pumping everything on the trail. And so I'm going just as fast, if not faster, as the person who's in front of me who's sitting down and pedaling away. And so, you know, a lot of it just kind of depends on what your riding style is and what you want your riding style to be. And so if you're the kind of rider who tends to, be more technically proficient and stand more and pump more and do things like that, then the 29-inch wheels kind of lose that advantage that they talk about with the extra, feet per rotation that you're going to get from pedaling a 29-inch wheel. And so, you know, again, it's not the advantage isn't there. I just think that it's a little overhyped in the fact that riders really don't need to be worrying about pedaling more and getting further with each pedal. They need to be learning how to pedal less and yet go faster. And so, again, just kind of a little bit different perspective on the advantages of the 29-inch wheel. The second advantage that is mentioned is how they maintain their momentum better. Like once you get them up to speed, because they are a bigger wheel, then they will maintain their momentum and spin easier. And so, you know, again, that's not necessarily a good thing if you live in tight, twisty technical trails. And, you know, this is another thing that gets thrown out there a lot is know your trails, know your terrain, know where you ride, and it'll help you make a better choice when it comes to what kind of bike to ride. But, you know, here locally in Grand Junction, you know, a lot of the trails, especially out the Lunch Loop trails, are extremely rocky and you know, very twisty. And so it's hard to, you know, keep your momentum. You know, there's a lot of slowing down and then pedaling and then, you know, having to negotiate the trail. And so the downside of it carries its momentum better is it's harder to get it up to speed. And so again, if you live somewhere where, you know, having to negotiate slow, tight technical terrain is part of your reality, then that's actually a disadvantage. And, you know, I'll admit, I've actually not ridden a 29er on the trail. I have, you know, pedaled one around in a parking lot. And, you can definitely feel the difference in the wheels. I mean, when you stand up and give her, you can feel those wheels taking a little bit longer to wind up and get going. And, you know, for a rider, again, if you're an aggressive rider or you want to be an aggressive rider, and, you know, the kind of person that's always, you know, accelerating and, you know, working the trail like that, then again, you know, the 29 inch wheels may not be the best option for you. And so it also makes them a little bit more difficult to jump and stuff like that. Again, it's not that you can't, it just makes it more difficult to jump and things like that. So, you know, again, it's, you know, one of those advantages that may not necessarily be an advantage depending upon how you look at it. And then the last one is that the 29 inch wheels roll over obstacles easier. And, you know, this is one that really kind of, you know, I don't know what the word is. I just, when I think about this logically, it just kind of makes me scratch my head. Because you shouldn't be slamming into things with your front wheel on the trail anyways. And, you know, I know that that's just not how most riders ride, which kind of makes me wonder if that's one of the reasons that 29-inch wheels have gained popularity so quickly, is they kind of mask the inability to unweight the front end and get it up and over obstacles. And so basically, if you slam into an object with a 26-inch wheel and then you slam into an object with a 29-inch wheel, the 29-inch wheel is going to get up and over the object easier. However, if you learn how to, you know, say manual or you know, unweight the front end, and so when you hit the object with your 26-inch wheel, now you're not slamming into it. Now you've got less force behind it because you're smoother and you've got more trail flow. Well, that 26-inch wheel is going to get up and over that obstacle just as easy, if not easier, as a 29-inch wheel in the hands of a rider who just slams into everything. And so, you know, again, there's more to it than the size of the wheel when it comes to getting up and over obstacles. And, you know, like I've already mentioned before, I personally think that your money would be way better invested in a skills clinic and also in getting fitter and stronger. Because, you know, again, when I look at these advantages of 29-inch wheels, I just keep thinking to myself, you know, if you just increase your flow, you got better skills and you got stronger, you'd accomplish everything. You'd be able to do everything that the 29-inch wheels are supposed to do for you, but without their inherent disadvantages. Like I said, the fact that they are harder to get up to momentum, that they don't steer as quick. You know, there are some things, especially for aggressive trail riding, where there are some disadvantages to the 29-inch wheels. And so, you know, if you can gain the quote-unquote advantages while avoiding the disadvantages, that's the route that I would go. And so, you know, again, let's just put this in perspective for a second. I'm not saying that 29-inch bikes are bad, 29-inch wheels are bad. I'm just saying that I think that there's a lot of marketing hype, and I think that there's a lot of misconstruement of the advantages of them that kind of give riders the impression that they are this magical cure-all, you know. And I've seen it firsthand where, you know, a rider is struggling and is not advancing and is not doing as well as they think that they should be, so they need a 29-inch bike. The 29-inch bike is going to cure the problem. And again, it's not the 29-inch bike that's the problem, it's the rider that's the problem. And the 29-inch wheels may mask some of the problems initially. Like I said, if you're a rider that tends to slam into everything, well, yeah, you're going to find that a 29-inch wheel is going to make rolling over stuff a little bit easier. But, you know, you haven't fixed the root problem, which is the fact that you need to get stronger and that you need to increase your technical skills. And so, again, it comes back. I've mentioned this a couple times. You know, in the book Good to Great, they talk about, you know, they were talking about companies, but the same thing can be applied to athletes. You know, what's the process that an athlete or a mountain biker goes through to become great? And any great athlete uses technology to enhance their progress, not to stimulate progress. And so that's kind of what I see happening with the 29er trend, is you've got riders who are using it to stimulate progress. You know, they want to get faster, they want to get better, and so they think that they need to go buy a bike to jumpstart that process, instead of understanding that if I get better, then I can pretty much ride any bike and I'm going to get these advantages. And so if you want to ride a 29er at that point, then no problem. But like I said, I have a problem with riders using it as a crutch rather than facing the real issues. And so, you know, again, I have friends that ride 29ers. It's a very popular bike around here. You know, one of the best riders I know loves his 29er hardtail, pedaling around. And again, that's not saying don't get a 29er. I'm just saying keep some of these things in mind, you know, keep some of these things in perspective when you're thinking about getting a 29er. If you've got, you know, a stable full of bikes and you're looking to add another one, and you know, then fine. But you know, if you're looking to get better, I don't think that a bigger wheel size is the answer to getting better. And you know, like I said, I think that with some training and some skills work, that you can gain pretty much all of the advantages that you would see with a 29-inch wheel. So again, just some things to keep in mind. You know, just remember, the mountain biking industry, it is an industry, and for better or for worse, industries exist to make money. And you know, one of the best ways to make money is to introduce something new. And so, you know, we've seen it over and over and over in this industry when it comes to bottom brackets, when it comes to chain guides, when it comes to head tubes, and when it comes to, you know, handlebar size and stuff like that, clamp size. The you know, changing standards in the industry, you know, force riders to spend more money. And so, you know, I'm not saying that is the driving force behind this, but you can't deny that there is some money to be made in trying to convince riders that a 29-inch wheel is going to be the cure-all for their problems, or a 650B, which is starting to gain some popularity. You know, 650B is basically a 27.5-inch wheel. It's halfway between the 26 and the 29. And so, you know, it's supposed to split the difference between the advantages and disadvantages. So that's just some, you know, my opinion on the matter. It's not a, you know, I'm obviously not saying 29ers suck. So please don't freaking say that. Don't flame me in an email and tell me how much I suck because I hate 29ers. I just think they're a little bit overhyped. And I think that for your average rider, they would be way better off sticking with a regular size mountain bike and a regular size mountain bike wheel and investing in some fitness and skills training than, you know, dropping a few grand on a new bike with a new new wheel size. So that's basically it. That's kind of my thoughts on the 29er trend, and you know, 26-inch wheels versus 29-inch wheels. And hopefully you guys have enjoyed this gear review. You know, let me know what you think about this, and I'll talk to you in the next one. Hey everybody, in this podcast training tip, I wanted to talk about a concept of how you can't do more of the same to get to the next level. And it's kind of an appropriate time to talk about this because, you know, we are going into the off season for a lot of people that listen to this podcast. And so it's time to, you know, take stock in how you did in this season and think about what you want to improve upon and things like that. And so hopefully you're starting to formulate some sort of plan. You know, how am I going to progress my riding? You know, what am I going to do this off season to lay the foundation to help me take my riding to the next level next year? And one of the problems that we fall into is we fall in love with what has given us success in the past. And, you know, there's obviously some logic to that. You know, I mean, if you've had success with something in the past, then, you know, odds are that it's probably not going to be a terrible idea to try it again. But the problem is that it just doesn't work that way, unfortunately, in the real world, where, like I said, you can't keep doing more of the same thing in order to advance to the next level. And in my facility, I call it the fat person curling soup cans analogy, where, you know, if you take somebody who's, you know, morbidly obese, you know, like somebody who's on like the Biggest Loser, and you get them up off the couch and you tell them to start walking around the block curling soup cans, they're going to lose some weight. But that doesn't make walking around the block curling soup cans the best way to lose weight. And the problem is when they start to stall out, you know, because they will. I mean, obviously that's not, you know, it's not a very intense exercise. Their body's going to adapt to it pretty quickly, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, they got to worry about nutrition. There's other things that go into it. But if they just fell in love with that first method, they're like, well, what are you talking about, man? I lost 5 pounds walking around the block curling soup cans. This is the best method ever. I lost weight on this. So obviously I just need to do more of this, right? Now I need to walk 2 blocks and then I need to walk 3 blocks or I need to get bigger soup cans. I mean, you know, what initially gave me some results must be the best way, right? And, you know, this analogy is a little silly. I mean, most people would agree that that's not the case. That obviously, you know, even if you had some success with walking around the block curling soup cans at first, that if you really want to take, you know, your fat loss to the next level, you're gonna have to start doing some different stuff. But what's funny is that this is how a lot of riders look at getting better on their bike. And in fact, this is the number one reason that the just get, you know, get better at riding by just riding more thing is, you know, out there. It's the most prevailing mindset in mountain biking, and it, you know, something that I fight, you know, here locally. You know, I mean, I got riders that ride with me all the time, and I still hear, you know, well, mountain bikers don't train, you know, they just ride their bike. That's how you get better, is ride your bike, right? Or, you know, anytime I get an article posted on like Pink Bike, you always get some, you know, kid popping on there going, oh, these videos suck because, you know, all you need to do is just ride your bike more, right? You need to get out and ride. And so again, the problem with that is you're falling into the curling soup cans analogy that I was talking about, where yes, when you first started riding your bike, every time you went out riding, you got better. And so it's easy to see how you can start to think that, well, riding my bike is the best way to get better at riding my bike, right? And so if I start to stall out and I start to, you know, not see as much progress, I must need to ride more, right? Because just riding my bike got me to this point, so I need more of it. And so, you know, again, it sounds silly when I use the, you know, the fat person curling soup cans analogy, but it doesn't sound so silly when I use the misguided mountain biker you know, analogy and basically put it in the context of how a lot of mountain bikers look at getting better on their bike. And so, you know, yes, at first just riding your bike got you better at riding your bike, but in order to take your riding to the next level, at a certain point, you can't keep doing more of the same in order to get to that next level. You have to add something different, something better into your program. And so let's say for, you know, argument's sake that you've never tried any sort of training or something like that. You've always just relied on riding your bike. So now you start looking around. You know, hopefully you come to bikejames.com and, you know, you sign up for the blog updates and you get a free bodyweight workout that comes along with that. And so you start doing that bodyweight workout. Well, the same thing's going to happen. And, you know, in fact, I get this a lot. I get emails from people saying, oh, man, I've been, you know, doing your no gym, no problem workout. And, you know, I've been getting these great results, but, you know, now the results have kind of stopped coming. And so what do I need to do? Do I need to do this, you know, 4 or 5 times a week? You know, do I need to add an extra set? What do I need to do? The reality is you need to do something different. You know, everything's only going to help you for a certain period of time. And so when you start to run into plateaus, you have to start looking for other ways to bust past that plateau rather than just look at what's worked in the past and figure out how you can do more of it. And, you know, again, I'm not saying that you just, you know, disregard that because, you know, even after just riding your bike has stopped progressing your riding and you need to add other things into your training regimen, you still need to ride your bike. You know, obviously, you still need to be getting out there and riding your bike because that is ultimately how you get better. But you have to get off the bike and do things to, you know, increase your strength, your cardio, your mobility, things like that, in order to increase your potential on the bike. And then riding the bike helps you fulfill that potential. You know, even after the no gym, no problem bodyweight workout stops delivering results, you still want to incorporate bodyweight training into your program. It still needs to be part of your program. You know, that's the main thing that happens with the bodyweight workouts is that you need to start adding load at some point. You know, your body stops adapting to your body weight as a strength stimulus. It's no longer challenging your body enough to get it stronger. And so that's when you got to start incorporating loaded exercises and dumbbells and barbells and kettlebells and medicine balls and things like that that allow you to weight and load movements and allow you to progressively continue to load those movements. So, you know, that's kind of the next step in your training after you've, you know, done the, you know, some body weight stuff, but you still want the body weight stuff in your routine. You still want to be doing push-ups. You still want to be doing body weight squats and lunges and things like that. So even after you have advanced past a level, that's not saying that that level has nothing to offer you. It's just saying that you need to add something else into your program in order to continue to advance. So, you know, when you're doing a weight training program, you still need to be riding your bike. You still need to be doing these bodyweight exercises. And so that's kind of how the process of becoming a better rider works. And I think this is one of the reasons that a lot of riders get frustrated and kind of turn into head cases is because they hit these plateaus and the advice that they're getting from their friends is just flat out wrong, telling them, well, you just need to ride more. And so, you know, riding more at a certain point will not make you a better rider. You have to get off the bike and do some other things. So, you know, some other things that you need to keep in mind, nutrition. Nutrition plays a huge role in your overall results. You know, if you've never dialed your nutrition in, if you haven't read my blog post on the 1-2-3s of nutrition, you know, that's a great read for you, because that'll help give you an idea of what you want to do to start integrating good nutrition, easily integrate good nutrition into your overall program. So, you know, that's another level that if you haven't looked at, you know, is something that can really help enhance your riding if you're looking at taking your riding to the next level. You know, proper supplements, you know, in this podcast I talked about fish oil, you know, looking at what, you know, proper supplementation can do for you is another thing. Of course, I would put nutrition in front of supplementation. I would get nutrition dialed before I started worrying about that. Adding in mobility and stretching and foam roller work is another thing that will really help. And so, you know, all of these things that I talk about on my blog and in these podcasts are different components of training that can help enhance your riding. But they're not going to help enhance your riding as long as you're stuck in the mindset that I just need to continue to do what I had success with in the past. I just need to do more of it. And so again, that's how we get stuck in a rut, you know, just doing the same thing, riding the same trails in the same way, doing the same workout, doing the same exercises, doing the same loading parameters, you know, all of these things. It's human nature to see success with something and then think, this is it. But the reality is it's not it. Like, the best thing for you, there's a saying in the strength training industry, the best program for you is the one that you're not doing. You know, basically, as soon as you do something, there's a window of, you know, how many times you can do something, and it's going to progress you. And it starts to have diminishing returns. You know, the time that you're investing starts to give you less and less return on that investment. And so, you know, you have to become aware of those things and know that, you know, if you are running into a plateau, to look for other things to help bust you past that. Start integrating, you know, better strength training into your program. Start integrating better nutrition, you know, mobility, you know, basically all the things that I talk about on my blog, like I mentioned before. So, but that's basically it. You know, it's just kind of the mindset, you can't do more of the same. And in fact, one of the first times this got brought to my attention was at a mentorship program that I went to at Results Fitness, and Alan Cosgrove, he was talking about business, but he's saying, you know, you can't do more of what got you a six-figure income to get you a seven-figure income. And you can't just keep doing more of what got you that seven-figure to make an eight-figure. And so, you know, this lesson applies across the board to everything in life, that you know, Don't get stuck. You're not looking for the magic bullet because there is none. You're looking for what's going to help get you results right now, and then you're going to start looking for what's going to help get you results when that stops delivering results. And just know that that day is going to come, and don't let it frustrate you. And, you know, just kind of like a side note, I forget what I was talking about. I think I was talking with Scott Hart, the old editor for Decline Magazine, and we were talking about how American downhillers, you know, pro American downhillers are just these giant head cases for the most part, and you know how Aaron Gwynn has been able to avoid becoming a head case. And you know, I just told him, I was like, well, you know, he's got a coach on his side. He's never run into a plateau. Like, he can just call me up and say, hey, James, you know, I think I need to start working more on this, or hey, James, I'm feeling this when I'm racing. And I'm able to give him a program and a strategy to help address that. So, you know, he hasn't hit that plateau that I think turns a lot of riders, you know, in this case, we're, you know, talking about pro American men downhillers, into head cases where, you know, you hit the plateau and you just don't know how to get past it. You know, you're doing everything that worked for you in the past and it's just not working this time. And so that's enough to turn anybody into a head case and start thinking like, well, what the hell do I have to do here to get better? You know, when the reality is you got to start looking at things that you've never done before in order to take it to that next level. So just some food for thought while we're going into the off season. You know, it's one of my favorite training tips. One of the things that I tell people, you know, if you don't want to ride like everyone else, don't train like everyone else. So if everyone else is out there, just riding their bike, you know, they're not doing mobility training, they're not doing strength training, you know, they're not following proper nutrition, they're not integrating any of these things into their program. Well, you know, if you want to ride better than everyone else, there's a pretty good blueprint for how to get better than them. You can't do what everybody else does and expect to be better than them. And so, so that's it for this month's training tip. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this. If you guys got any questions on any of this, feel free to post it on my blog at bikejames.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. I'll talk to you guys in the next podcast. All right, everybody. Well, that does it for this podcast. Hope you guys have enjoyed this one, giving you guys some more things to think about, some more unique perspectives on training and getting better for our sport here. You know, personally, this last weekend had a pretty fun event up at the ranch. Called it Hucktober. It's a little fundraising thing for a bike park that we're putting in at the Lunch Loop Trails around here. And my last run down got a little too crazy, tried to show off on a wall ride and go a little bit higher than I necessarily had speed for, and fell off the wall before I'd cleared the gap that the wall takes you across, and so fell and busted up my hand pretty good. I think I broke my thumb or something like that. It's looking a little discolored, so I think I might go have that looked at today. But so yeah, a little bummed on that I'm going to miss out on some of the end of the riding season. The weather's cooling off, and this is definitely the time of year when I like to try to get out, you know, as much as possible before the snow hits and I'm kind of forced off of the trail. But anyways, it gives me plenty of time to keep working on my update to the Ultimate MTB Workout Program. You know, just a quick update on that. Almost done with that. I plan on having that released here in the next couple weeks. But I am going to be doing a pre-sale on it for people that have already purchased the original Ultimate MTB Workout Program. And so, you know, again, you will get a chance to upgrade to version 3.0, and you're going to be paying less total for both of the programs, version 2.0 and 3.0, than you would if you wait and buy 3.0 when it comes out by itself. Basically, when 3.0 comes out, I'm raising the price to $147. It's a much better program, much more in depth, and you know, I just think the workouts have definitely evolved. I mean, over the last couple years, I've gained a lot more experience since I came out with version 2.0. You know, in that time, I've, you know, worked real closely with Aaron Gwynn and the Yeti World Cup team, and you know, just my own personal experience in the facility and stuff like that. So I definitely think the programs are going to reflect that experience, and the results are going to reflect that as well. And so, but yeah, when the new program comes out in a couple weeks, the price is going up to $147. Right now you can get the Ultimate MTB Workout for $97, and later this week I'm going to tell people that already have it how they can upgrade for $17. So, like I said, you're going to be paying less and you're going to have two programs than if you wait for version 3.0 to come out. So anyway, just a little update on that. And two, when you do get the update, you will get a rough copy of version 3.0. So basically, later this week, some of you will have the new workouts in your hands and be able to go to the gym and start putting them to use right away. And so yeah, that's something to keep in mind. You don't have to wait for another couple of weeks when obviously when the finalized version comes out, you guys will get the finalized version as well. But I want to get what I have done in your hands as soon as possible so you guys can start taking advantage of it as soon as possible. And so that's it. Just kind of a little update on what's going on with that. And also, if anybody is here, around locally, we're doing a new the grand opening for the new bike park out at Lunch Loop this weekend on October 15th or 16th, I think it is. Let's see here, on the 16th, Saturday the 16th, and I will be doing a skills clinic to go along with that. So, again, if anybody is around and wants to come out and check that out and get a free skills clinic, then yeah, come on out and do that. And so yeah. So that's about it for now. As always, if you guys enjoy this podcast, if you like it, please do me a favor, go to iTunes. You can subscribe to the podcast there, and while you're there, you can do a little review and rate it. Again, my goal is to get this podcast rated high enough so when somebody goes to iTunes and types in mountain biking, that this is one of the first ones that pop up, because I really believe that the information on here can really help riders out and help give them some ideas on how to improve their riding and avoid frustration and just have more fun on the trail. So, my mission is try to get this info out to as many riders as possible. So I really appreciate your guys' help and support in doing that. So once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. You can check me out on the web at bikejames.com. If you got any questions or comments about anything that you've heard on this podcast, pop on over there and leave a comment there, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. And I will talk to you guys next time.